Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to another news episode of Cinematic Universe. I'm your host, James Hunt, and joining me is...
Reese Williamson.
And Joe Cunningham.
We're back together to discuss some of the news that has occurred in the previous month. I don't know if you've noticed, there's been a bit.
It's been a bit of news, yeah, goodness.
I'm thankful this holiday season that I am not the one who compiled it.
I mean, yeah, we'll see how much there is.
Do we get veto powers again?
Let's say yes, why not?
But I feel like it's one of those months where like there's been a ton of news stories, but a lot of them fit into one big story, you know, that you could as once, because that, you know, probably 12 headlines came out on this one thread, and it's all connected.
We're gonna do all 12 individually.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. speaking of, we do not know the sort of storyline that the news story that would come after. We are experiencing them in real time. Like, oh, Henry Cavill's back as Superman. How exciting. That one change, and wow, amazing.
Yeah, well, okay. So we did cover on the last episode our reactions to Henry Cavill being back as Superman. So I'll start with the big news, which is that The Rock has unfollowed the Warner Brothers and Black Adam Twitter accounts. This is actual stuff that people have reported.
The end of the podcast, right? That's good. bye podcast, goodbye.
It's like the Ravens leaving the tower is what it is.
That's so funny.
Can I just veto the whole DC thing? It is amazing the amount of stuff, and yes, the ripple effects to most recently The Rock unfollowing everyone. Black Adam has not been a good like PR piece for The Rock, I would say.
No, I think it's sort of interesting how quickly, after years of banging that drum, he has very quickly disassociated himself from any potential stink of failure by just being like, nope, nothing to do with me.
Well, he's put the drum in the box, he's buried the box in the desert, and he's driven away at speed from the box.
It's
weird timing, though, because I don't think it was that the movie came out and he was like, right, I need to wash my hands of this. It was right, I am doing a victory lap. Look, I've got Henry Cavill back. He's announcing this. It's gonna make so much better. Like the hierarchy of power has shifted. And then all of the stuff starts happening in the background with DC, which we don't really, you know, there's not been any reporting there on how it affects Black Adam, but I think we can guess given the other bits. Then, you know, there starts to be, you know, reports saying, oh, actually, Warner Brothers is going to take a little bit of a bath on Black Adam because, you know, it's made a decent amount of money. But actually, you know, when you take everything into account, and he's like, no. I am going to call out these publications publicly and say, we aren't losing money. Fake news. That didn't happen. And then, like, implications coming out of Warner Brothers that he had kind of, like, posted doctored accounts. That implied the movie had made more money than it had. just all really strange. But, yeah, all reeks of an actor not wanting to take that L. And then yeah, obviously the restructuring in the background, and I think him going, maybe I do just slink off into the night because it sounds like the direction they're going in doesn't include Black Adam. There was also the reporting, right, that he turned down a cameo in Shazam because he was like, I only play in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like, I think we said this after Black Adam, it kind of does feel a bit weird to imagine that character fighting Shazam, but also like, you've got the same fucking wizards in your movie, mate. It's not inconceivable that you would show up in that.
It's a shared universe. You've got to be able to play ball.
Yeah.
But I do think we probably don't hear much from him on this again.
No, I think that's it.
I think Black Adam 2 is probably not a goer.
It's just very curious now how they manage the press tours for the next three movies. You got Shazam, and then after that you got after that is Aquaman, or after that is The Flash.
Shazam, The Flash, Blue Beetle, then Aquaman.
They're the four that are in the can or you know, ready and waiting.
Yeah, they're the four that are pointless. As I saw someone on Twitter say, James Gunn, what is the point of us even watching these movies if we know they're not going to count?
I mean, that's obviously a silly response, but part of the pitch to audiences to get audiences excited about this stuff is that it connects. And you know, what's the point of doing anything in these fucking our fucking in our lives? Then you know, sure, nothing. No point in watching any movie.
Yeah, you're right.
But that's why I wonder about the press tours, because the press tour is about getting people hyped, getting people excited. You know, you can sort of talk about The Rock and his seeming more and more like a sort of sociopath who eats 15 cod a day and does Insta lives from his gym and just doesn't seem to speak like a human being anymore. But you know, he really did try and sell the Black Adam. You know, he did his bit and really trying to sell it. And I just don't know that any of the talent in front of or behind the camera are going to do much of anything for. And then, you know, it's tied up with all of that. You got all of the Flash Ezra Miller stuff, which will also be, you know, will be added onto that. And why didn't you just, you know, could you have just waited actually a year to make some of these statements? I don't know.
Should we just take a step back, because I'm aware we dived into this without giving any context.
Yeah, none of this is about The Rock and following Twitter account. So I think we're going to have to.
I'm sure most people will be aware, but basically, the top line stuff is that James Gunn and Peter Safran have been hired as like the new stewards of the DC universe. Then an article comes out in Variety saying, you know, basically from what we're hearing, Henry Cavill's done as Superman. There's not going to be any more Aquaman after the sequel, but they want Jason Momoa to play Lobo. Those four movies are still coming out. And in the midst of this, James Gunn announced that Blue Beetle was going to cinemas when previously it was going to be in HBO Max thing, and that Wonder Woman probably isn't progressing. A Wonder Woman 3 isn't progressing.
I think definitely at this point.
Yes, but
certainly not with Patty Jenkins.
But yeah. Then all of these different people start talking. So Patty Jenkins has to release a statement, and then James Gunn starts tweeting and kind of going like, some of this is true, some of it isn't, and then. And then Henry Cavill released a statement going, yeah, you know how I said I was back? Well, I'm not back. And it sounds like that, you know, all of this is maybe a little bit ongoing, that people are taking meetings individually with Gunn and Safran, and that maybe they wanted to have some of these conversations. But it's eked out in such a messy way. And because James Gunn is so terminally on Twitter, you know, like it's yeah. we're getting like, I was seeing like half an hour before we were starting this record, he's tweeting out a long thread around, you know, kind of like, we knew this was going to be messy, we knew that certain sections of the fandom weren't going to be happy with the direction we were taking, but trust that all of this is right for the future of the DCU. And it does sound like it is messy, but as we've discussed on this podcast a bunch of times, the DC stuff for a long time has been messy. And if this is what they need to do to clean it up long term, then, you know, we can discuss the merits and how, you know, how some stuff sounds like a better idea than others, and how it's, you know, it's leaked out in a in an unpleasant way. But I mean, it can't be much worse than the kind of shit show of the past year of, like, you know, having a Batgirl movie in development that then is just a tax write off, and, you know, kind of like all of the drama around the Snyder Cut and all of the stuff that we found out since then that was happening in the background. It's all weird, it's all strange, but you wonder whether the output, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, might justify it retrospectively, positive for DC, and hopefully, you know, like, actually taking a step back and doing these things one step at a time might be beneficial. Like, it still seems mad to me that, you know, that they're, you know, the best part of a decade in, and they're still throwing a, you know, a Black Adam movie at you and going, and this is the Justice Society, look, there's this one, and this one, and you're like, okay. And it's not their movie. They're just here. Okay. When they've seen how its characters are successfully introduced over in the MCU, and kind of like seem to, you know, be trying to ape the MCU, but not making any of the smart decisions along the way. It's fascinating.
To stand up for the DCEU approach, barely. You know, I sort of think part of the mix has, once they knew that they were so far behind Marvel, I think the move has been, let's try and do things differently, actually. And let's try and maybe build a proper, you know, star vehicle movies around people like Adam. Let's try and creator, you know, creator, not owned, but, you know, creatively driven projects, Joker. You know, these are movies that we didn't like, but it did feel a bit like a different approach. And I just worry.
And there are also movies in there that we did like. You know, the first Wonder Woman. I like Aquaman.
I really liked the Batman
this year. But all of that, I think what has been messy about it, Reese, is that the Snyder stuff has never quite gone away, and I think maybe the fault of that is Wonder Woman being good, and Wonder Woman being good, and then Aquaman making a shit ton of money meant, well, we can't abandon that, but also we kind of don't want to be wedded to all of that, and then it's kind of been all of these things at the same time, and then like wanting to be connected some of the time, and then not wanting to be connected other bits of the time, and it's. Yeah, I think it's entirely possible to, you know, have their kind of more individual filmmaker approach, and still, you know, you'd imagine from what's been reported as well, is that the Matt Reeves Batman stuff is still going on off to the side, and that the Joker sequel is still happening, and maybe, you know, there is still the opportunity to make those kinds of movies, but also there will be like canonical DCU films, and If the way to be able to do that is to just go, look, we've got to say goodbye to everyone that came before and start again, then fine. But also, it's interesting because it doesn't sound like everything is just being wiped off the slate. It sounds like some stuff might survive, which is interesting.
And then, you know, the Lobo detail was weird. You know, the idea that, okay, so if the four upcoming things, and then we'll do a reset after that. But then one of the stars of one of those four things, Jason Momoa, he'll continue to be a tentpole character, but a totally different character. One that, you know, you can kind of see on paper, you know, a fit for. But there's that weirdness. You know, there's also obviously the multiverse shenanigans with the Flash, you know, that actually could do a soft reboot of all of this sooner rather than later. Maybe before Blue Beetle and Aquaman, but then Aquaman, I guess, would be in the previous old universe, you know. And then the thing with the Batman and the Joker continuing, like, you know, I liked the Batman, and, you know, the Joker is a movie, but you haven't solved the problem. You know, you're continuing to have disparate bits. So then, not what have you gained? I know what you've gained, but, you know. And then there's the bit that we haven't mentioned, which is, you know, I just watched a 45-minute long special that I thought was it almost interminably boring by the guy who's going to be the shepherd of all this stuff. So then it's like, okay, well, has James Gunn done enough to be the guy, and him and Safran, to be the guys who we think can fix all this? I don't know, actually. I don't know.
Mm, no, it's a gamble. It's a massive gamble. I don't know, yeah, because...
can it be worse than what's come before, I think, is the question. And I think...
Yes, I think...
probably it's not likely to.
No, I think it absolutely could. It could be, all building around one larger story that's not interesting, which would be, you know, a problem. And it could mean, like... because I think within the DC stuff at the moment, you get a huge range of outcomes in terms of quality, you know, vast range of outcomes in terms of quality of the movies they make, because there is that lack of identity. And the question is, do you want, you know, one stinker for every really interesting movie, or even one interesting movie for every two or three stinkers, maybe, that's been the ratio so far, and move closer to, like...
the Marvel model of tepid three-star movies across the board.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I think when Marvel is doing that, you know, when Marvel's doing things well, those are, like, 3.5 to 4-star movies, and what they're building towards is exciting and interesting, and when it's been less successful, it's just like, okay. You know, and so I think it could be worse, but hopefully it won't be. I think probably the way, because the DC stuff has all been a little bit disjointed already, I'm not too worried about people caring about the upcoming stuff. I'm not too worried about the press tours for them. I mean, certainly Shazam is Peter Safran's franchise, so I think everyone's going to be more than happy there. I'd imagine that that James Wan and Jason Momoa are going to be, you know, if Jason Momoa is potentially looking at another role within DC, I'd imagine there'll be no issues there. Blue Beetle sounds like its own thing. It's obviously something that they have a degree of confidence from. If James Gunn, if under this new direction, they've bumped it up to theatrical. And the Flash remains the big weird elephant in the room that, like, you know, they've tried to do that bit of early kind of rehabilitation around it, but then it sounds like even the content of the movie is a bit of a mess, because it's now chock full of cameos of characters.
Well, the cameos have been cut.
Well, yeah, but that's what I mean. So we're now cutting around cameos of characters, and you don't know how substantial those cameos were going to be. Like, is it still? Yeah. And, like, you know, when Michael Keaton first signed up to be in that, he was going to be in multiple different DC movies, and now isn't. You know, it sounded like they were developing, you know, like a comeback for the 89 Batman, and that's not happening now. So there was talk of
Batman Beyond.
Yes, yeah,
starring him, but no.
So yeah, and then Cavill and Momoa, Gal Gadot, Ben Affleck, like how much do all of these feature into it? And that's before you get into the messiness of Ezra Miller. That movie remains a huge question mark. I would have to imagine the reason that they're ploughing ahead with it is there's so much money invested in it.
I mean, part of me thinks maybe, because they talked about the ending being basically a sort of flashpoint riff, right? So maybe that's, they feel like they need that to explain the story that's going to come after. And some of those movies will be, you know, new reboot universe, and some will be old ones. But maybe in their minds, Flashpoint holds the narrative explanation of how some of these characters can carry on and some can't.
Do we expect Ezra Miller to be one of those characters who carries
Absolutely
on?
Absolutely no fucking chance.
Exactly. So what a weird film experience that would be if the end of the movie is, and this is how your protagonist is wiped out of existence.
You can easily shoot a new scene with a new Flash.
Yeah, and hey, look, here's Zac Efron as your new Flash.
Yeah,
or most likely someone who was in the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird time for DC. The thing I will say is, I hope it works out for them, because historically in the comics, when DC gets lazy, it makes Marvel get lazy. And a solid rivalry is always good for the fans. Well, if DC can pull their shit together and start really knocking out these movies well, that will maybe get Marvel off of its ass, basically.
Can I just, before we move on from this, can I just give myself a pat on the back? Because I think when we talked about Superman stuff, and we talked about, I think I asked a non Henry Cavill Superman movie. I think I pitched an adaptation of the Grant Morrison Action Comics, which was about a young Superman. I just wonder if
because that's one of the details.
Yeah, I was going to say that was the next detail I was going to move on to, actually, James Gunn has announced that the next Superman movie, which they are currently developing, is going to be a younger Superman set earlier in his career, not an origin story. But I mean, that interests me, because I think we've seen a lot of Superman in the last 10 years or whatever, but we haven't seen particularly classic Superman movies. And I think there's a really good opportunity to take that character back to basics and reconnect people with what is cool and fun and light about Superman. For all that people love Henry Cavill's performance, which I think, in fairness,
that's been another
it's
weird.
It's bizarre, isn't
that's,
it?
Well,
right?
It's been another weird thing about this past week, where it's like, oh my god, let's pour one out for the iconic Superman performance of Henry Cavill, who, like, I think we agree, like, has
moments of brilliance.
I wouldn't go up.
Brilliance is too much.
Yeah, I think he has an aura and he looks the part. But outside of a handful of scenes in Man of Steel, like never really felt like Superman to me. It didn't get the opportunity over what he was doing to do a lot of the things that you expect to see from Superman. And I saw Andrew Ellard on Twitter had posted something about, like, you know, he wasn't even the best Superman, the best Superman performance during his tenure of being Superman, you know? which I'm not too familiar with the TV stuff, but I wouldn't be surprised to hear that. I don't know. It's a shame for Henry Cavill, because he's obviously walked away from The Witcher, come back and now it's not happening.
There are rumours that his walking away from The Witcher was a bit less...
That maybe there was other stuff going on in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But regardless, it's been from a public-facing point of view, it's been a chastening couple of weeks.
Yeah.
A young Superman movie... Getting back to that, and for me, it doesn't even have to be the, like, traditional depiction of Superman. Like, I know that they were developing that Black Superman movie at one point, and I think you could do interesting Superman stories that aren't necessarily your trad Superman, but that capture that essence of the character and capture, like, you know, the thing that people identify with being Superman and have some of the markers of a classic Superman story of, you know, like the Daily Planet or Smallville and, you know,
Clark Kent, yeah.
And being a good person who cares about human life, you know, all of that stuff. That would be nice. Yeah. And Clark Kent, I'd love to see some Clark Kent on screen.
Reese, any thoughts?
I will just go. I mean, I think there's one thing the DC movies haven't done enough versus the Marvel stuff over the last 10 years is just look at the comics. Like, look at comics that have connected with people, that have had good reviews from, yes, from the very old stuff, but from the more modern stuff too. And again, I could see a version of, you know, a Superman trilogy where your, you know, your first two movies adapt Grant Morrison's Action Comics run, and then your third movie adapts All-Star Superman, you know, and then you could, you know, there's something there with that is that has an authorial voice behind it, Grant Morrison, who was telling a Superman story. So there's, I'll pitch that. And I'll just point on Henry Cavill. You know, you hear those stories about, oh, Henry Cavill, he was close to Bond, he was close to Spider-Man, he was close to Batman. He is an also-ran who rightfully didn't get those roles because he wasn't as good as the real stars. And he doesn't, you know, he just doesn't have that X factor that movie stars do. And he should, you know, never, you know, who knows how casting, I'm sure casting processes are very complicated, but, you know, he got lucky getting cast as Superman. He didn't deserve that role. He doesn't have it. And I think he will fade from public life.
Oh,
I'm going to have to
go 180. I will defend Cavill in that I think he can be interesting on screen. He's a very fun foil in Fallout. He's good fun in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I don't think he is, you know, completely inept and not worth being in these kind of franchises, but like, I also don't think it is a devastating loss to not have him as Superman. I do think it's interesting, though, that not just from a this story point of view and a comics point of view, that they're going with a younger Superman, or that's the direction they want to take. But I almost kind of see it like Bond as well. Like, I saw someone post after like the Superman gig was up, like, oh, maybe he'll be in it. Maybe he'll be available to be Bond. And I'm like, too old. No, too old. And also, that would be bad. But yeah, too old. And, you know, maybe if you are wanting to, if you're James Gunn and Peter Safran, craft 10, 15 years worth of storytelling over movie, you know, over a series of movies, maybe you do want to start out with a younger Superman who you can sign up to a, you know, a 9-picture deal, and you cast someone in their late 20s who by the time you're finishing up is in their early 40s. You know, that might be a consideration that they're making now. And I do think, you know, it sounds insane, but it's not. You look at what Marvel's done, and if you do it right, you know, you are able to keep those actors around for that length of time and not worry about them kind of, especially with a super, I think it was particularly with Superman, you're probably wanting to hit a certain age and not go beyond that.
Do you guys think that James Gunn has shown with his past work that he can write a good Superman movie?
The thing I think, right, is that in all of James Gunn's work, I think he understands the essence of the characters. And particularly, I think Brightburn is a script where he deliberately did this kind of twisted version of the Superman story, right? But in doing that, he demonstrated that he understands, you know, what Superman is and how it would look, you know, turned on its side, in the same way Mark Miller can do that kind of thing.
Yeah, but
whether that means the stories will be good is a bigger question. But I don't think James Gunn's movies have been entirely bad.
No, definitely not. Like James Gunn, I think this is probably coming from Reese having watched the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special.
No, it's
recently.
Not that.
No. But let me finish. And your view of him being slightly tilted on maybe the Guardian shtick is running a little bit dry. And I think James Gunn has made good movies over his career. I didn't enjoy The Suicide Squad personally. And I can find some of the stuff he does a little bit grating and a little bit try hard. But I think the thing that's in the Guardians movies that would give me a sense of optimism for Superman is that he isn't afraid to kind of go for that kind of like just wearing the emotion on the sleeve moments. And I think there are some, like, you know, like the I'm Mary Poppins y'all moment in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. There are those moments of kind of like cheesy schmaltzy, like just niceness. There is, and that's why I didn't like the Suicide Squad, because I didn't see that kind of heart in the middle of it. But I think he's capable of that. I would hope that he is not writing and directing and is like the sole voice of a Superman movie, because I think he could contribute to a good Superman movie. Whether he could deliver like a great Superman movie as the sole authorial voice, I'm a bit more skeptical on. But I think with the right creative partners, then I don't think it's impossible.
Yeah, okay, you convinced me. You could see him writing really fun, like Jimmy Olsen, Lois Lane, sort of screwball-y stuff, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, definitely, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you could. I think my concern would be that, you know, he's the Guardian stuff is the Marvel stuff of kind of constantly undercutting the heroism of the characters, or the sort of the you know, it's just undercut. And again, having watched the thing I've just watched, that trick is throughout. And I just think Superman maybe shouldn't fit into that mold. You know, Superman should just be, you know, be a great hero. And you don't need Jimmy Olsen like saying like, oh, but your cape's stupid, or, you know, undercutting at all times. You need Superman to be super. You need him to be iconic.
I know what you mean. But I also think James Gunn knows Superman well enough that he wouldn't necessarily do that for Superman. Like, it makes sense for the Guardians, whether you like it or not, makes sense for them because they are C-listers.
Yeah, and it's a real, you know, and it's, I think it's a real statement of intent that, like, that, you know, you say it was in development, or I mean, I'd go further than that. He kind of announces a movie called, you know, he puts in quotes Superman. He says he's writing it. They haven't announced anything else since then. Like, it's that is them saying, we are, if we're going to reset, we know where we have to start, and we know what we have to get right to get all of this right. And James Gunn is not just going to, you know, hire people to, you know, he's going to be the voice. He's writing this. I agree with you, Joe, that, you know, you would want a collaborative, you know, director in there too, but it's a statement of intent, and you know, there's something to that, definitely.
I think that is a good point to end on. I'm gonna hop over to the Marvel side of things now. Donald Glover has been announced as starring in a Hypno Hustler movie from Sony, part of their Spider-Man universe. What do we think?
I'm pro this as much as we can be pro it, because it does sound to me, I was saying this to you on a chat thread, James, that it sounds like basically, and hands up here, right? When we were discussing the Bad Bunny El Muerto movie, I don't think I had grasped quite how big a deal Bad Bunny was. I was like,
no, I hadn't.
I was like, I am an old man, and it seems like there are like, you know, every so often I'll hear about a new musical act and I'll be like, is that real? Like, it'll be a tweet or something, and when I say new, it'll be someone who's been popular for like 2 years already, and I'm just hearing about them, and I'm like, is that real, or is that like, is there really a thing called a Doja Cat? Like, what's that? You know? And Bad Bunny definitely fell into that, into that like groove for me. But then, like, Bad Bunny's like the one of the most streamed artists of all time or something, like crazy popular, and is making a move into movies, and clearly Sony has gone. And do you know what? I kind of don't hate this in the old, like, no, in fact, it's the opposite of don't hate this. I like this in the old, like, Hollywood star vehicle, you know, mold, which is, you know, or in the old days, we want to be in business with that actor and let's build a project around them. And now for Sony, it's, hey, we've got all this IP. We want to work with you. So, hey, Bad Bunny, take a look through this Marvel encyclopedia over here. Is there a character you want to play? Oh, right. Okay. You're
I'll try it. No, I have to really click just one chapter.
Yes, you've got this chunk here. Okay. I'll be El Muerto. And then, yeah, I'd imagine it's like, okay, can someone in legal please prep the Tom Hardy contract, please? There you go. And, you know, and you now have free reign to go off and do something bug nuts in this movie that we can say is connected to Spider-Man. And maybe eventually there's a clause in that contract that says you'll turn up in a Spider-Man movie. But for the moment, go off and have some fun. And hopefully your name plus Marvel IP will be enough to turn a profit here. And then maybe as well, that when you're a movie star, Bad Bunny continues to make projects for Sony. Donald Glover continues to work with Sony rather than working elsewhere. And so, yeah, Donald Glover, Hypno Hustler. The character Hypno Hustler sounds like, I don't know anything about it. He sounds like a rad 70s disco dude. And I don't know if that is accurate, but sounds great to me. Like, Donald Glover is someone who should be, leading Hollywood movies. And if this is what it takes to, you know, get a project built around someone like Donald Glover these days, which is random Marvel bit of IP, then fine. And, you know, I'll go back and apologize, say the same for Bad Bunny. And, you know, I think it's probably the same case with Dakota Johnson. You know, we want to work with you. Here's a movie, Aaron Taylor Johnson, you know, anyone who was in, who was either has the surname Johnson or was in the movie Bullet Train, here's a contract. And yeah, off we go. It's fine. I'm happy for him. And it sounds bonkers.
What you've done here is made a good case for why this is a good idea. Do you think, based on Sony's previous actions, that's what they're going to do? Or do you think they'll be like, okay, make a Hypno Hustler movie, then we're going to put you in a Spider-Man spin-off nonsense? So can we get Tom Hardy to appear in a post-credit scene?
Yeah, maybe.
Get Michael Keaton to cameo in it?
Yeah,
maybe. Like, my fear is that you've suggested a really good way that people could, like, you know, bring in audiences by sort of promising, oh, this is, you know, technically Marvel stuff, but Sony will Morbius it by
trying to
turn it into shared universe crap.
But also, the interesting thing about Morbius, right, is that whilst it has that shared universe crap in it, it doesn't really... The movie doesn't really interact with it at all.
No.
And even that Venom post-credit sequence just ends up being a joke. You know, like...
To contrast with the DC chat before, like, you know, DC fans or the DC, the sort of people interested in that, the connection is important. The universe is important. But, like, there aren't fans of the Sony's Marvel Spider-Man universe characters. That isn't a real fan base. So you can kind of, in a way, you can kind of have your cake and eat it too. You can do, you know, star and creator driven projects that are just formed around a random piece of IP, and then you can change it fundamentally. And you can have a universe be shared in theory, but nobody's really caring that much about things being connected. But you can have the illusion of connection to kind of keep people trucking along. I don't know.
Maybe you can start to get those Tom Holland cameos where it's literally here is act one, scene one. Here is this character interacting with Spider-Man and getting their powers and having their origin story or whatever. And then we don't see Spider-Man for the rest of the movie because that's how he interacted with. And so then you can put Spider-Man in your trailer and carry on.
Because it's interesting, right? They have not announced, you know, any more Tom Holland movies. He has a contract for zero more Spider-Man movies. And meanwhile, Marvel is racking him up, you know, on one side. And actually, weirdly, Sony is racking them up on the other side, announcing a lot of projects, you know, having stuff in the can. I think they're currently filming or post-production on Kraven and Madam Web now, right? So those are ready to go, and various others. So maybe on both sides, they're sort of waiting to approach Tom Holland with you know, maybe something really different. Like, oh, we're actually not going to...
There is the rumour, isn't there, that Tom Holland signed on for another six, I think.
I would be...
only rumour.
I would be stunned if within the next 18 months that there isn't another Tom Holland Spider-Man movie in cinemas.
No, I agree, but who knows quite what that contract looks like? Who knows quite, you know, maybe maybe there'd be more precise stuff about how these two things connect, what he has to appear in the Sony stuff and the Marvel stuff. Who knows? But, you know, I'm going to say that contract has not been signed yet. Although I guess James is saying that rumors it has.
Well, I think the rumor is that it's out there. I don't think they'll announce it until it is actually signed, but.
I think there's too much money and too much success involved all sides of that table. You know, it's beneficial for Holland's career, for Zendaya's career, for Marvel, for Sony, for everyone involved.
Jacob Batalon.
Yes, exactly. It's beneficial for everyone involved for those to keep going.
Yeah.
Yes, but you know, but you also read. I mean, maybe it's just pure rumors, but you do read rumors that they are looking to settle down, Joe. I've read that in, you know, TikTok has told me that, I think. Zendaya, so that, you know, if the guy doesn't want to do it, it's not going to happen. You know, if they're like, hey, make six more of these, like, oh, I don't want to. I'll sign a deal for two more Uncharted and two more Spider-Mans. But no, I'm fuck you, I'll sign a six deal. I'll do my own stuff.
Don't believe it for a minute.
No.
The thing is, realistically, if Tom Holland says no, then fine, it's Miles Morales' time, right? So... if he really says no, there'll be Spider-Man movies, there'll just be a different Spider-Man. I do want to say that the Hypno Hustler, for anyone who doesn't know, is indeed a disco-themed villain.
Yes!
Who used to hypnotize audiences with the power of his music.
Yeah, sounds great.
Use the cover to commit crimes, primarily of theft.
That sounds great.
That's like, the thing, right? More than Madam Web, I can see a version of this story that is a standalone sort of knockabout, maybe period comedy about a guy with, you know, hypnosis powers who turns to crime. Like that. That works as a standalone pitch for me.
I mean, that concept as well. You could imagine doing like some fun, like. Blaxploitation, like Undercover Brother style riff.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah,
comedic blaxploitation riff.
Like there are plenty of angles on this character that would work as a standalone movie. You know,
I'm all in on this. Sounds great.
He should write and direct it. Or no, who's his Atlanta co guy hero?
MRI.
If they announce that, because Atlanta had frequently some genre elements, right? That would that would be cool if it was like, oh, this is kind of going to be the Atlanta follow up for these guys. Cool. That's all.
Okay. I think we've covered that one then. So I want to ask you guys: have you seen the Across the Spider-Verse trailer?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I think we're going to do that next then.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it. Yeah. Do you want to go and watch it? And I'll put a little edit point in here.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Okay, so I believe we're all up to date on the trailers.
Yes.
Let's start with Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which is the second of three Spider-Verse movies.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, really good. You know, you don't get a ton of plot, just all that the gorgeous visuals in the second half. You know, it's sort of you feel like there's an emotional through line with the mum's dialogue at the start. And then a bit from the, you know, Oscar Isaac as Spider-Man 2099 as the baddie. Just great. Yeah, just a really well put together trailer.
Well, here's my question, right? Spider-Man 2099 in the comics isn't a baddie, right?
No, I don't think he's a baddie in this one. I think he's
he'll be the antagonist. Right?
Antagonist.
Well,
yeah.
I wonder whether that's particularly the part two and part three of this, yeah, right? Yeah. Especially because they said Spot was going to be the villain in this, right? Or
voiced voiced by. Oh God,
Oscar Isaac.
No, Spot.
Oh, the Spot.
Oh, God, the guy from Scott Pilgrim, the baddie in Scott Pilgrim. Who am I thinking of?
Jason Schwartzman. Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wonder whether, you know. It looks like that this might be a something's fucked up in the Spider-Verse and we think and it gets blamed on Miles and the other Spider-Men.
Seems likely, doesn't it?
Spider-Man 2099 is the main one. But yeah, maybe also Miles does fuck up and make some bad decisions and who knows. But good trailer. I'm sure there's going to be lots of fun with, you know, a myriad of different Spider-Men. I know that they've spotted the PlayStation version is in there, and it's the Spider-Man with the bag on his head, who pops up quite a lot. he's literally in it like three times in that trailer, I would expect that they'll do the thing that the Dan Slott Spider-Verse crossover did, and like at the very least imply or find a way to include the live action Spider-Man in there as well, especially after, you know, how well that worked.
Especially how
in live action
No Way Home already ripped them off.
Yeah
It's time for some payback. Yeah,
but yeah, I would imagine that that will find a way in. It looks, you know, there's so much that I'm invested in from the first movie. Like, I want Peter B. Parker and Miles to hang out again. I care about that relationship between Miles and Gwen. I care about his family stuff. So the mum like framing device works in that trailer. It looks great, and I also love that I saw people like screenshotting different bits on Twitter of like that. Like if you like pause on particular frames, you can like see the pencil work, and you can see like little notes in the corner saying like what Pantone something's going to be, and. I love that whole aesthetic that they've landed on, that imperfect but kind of like I bought a book after the first movie, The Art of Spider-Verse, that, you know, those coffee table books that normally I look at and go like
what a cash in.
Yeah, but like genuinely we'll just leaf through the Spider-Verse one, and there's so much gorgeous stuff in there, you know, that didn't make the movie. I couldn't be more excited for that. And, you know, like, I would be surprised if they manage to, like, create another perfect object in the way that they did with the first. But, you know, if what they manage to do is kind of bring a lot of that craft and a lot of that heart to maybe, you know, something that's a bit bigger and more unwieldy. Certainly with it being two parts as well, I am getting a real Back to the Future parts 2 and 3 vibe. And I know that like lots of people have a problem with either Back to the Future part 2 or part 3, depending on, you know, what they like and what they don't like. And yeah, I'd be surprised if everyone comes out of this going, yeah, those were just as good as the first one. But me personally, I love that all three Back to the Future movies exist. And I love that the that the second two, I don't think either are as good as the first, but I love the trilogy as a whole, so I'm hopeful that that's what happens with this as well.
Yeah, I think this also could be the film that Doctor Strange was kind of promising it was going to be, but didn't have the budget to fulfill. You know, the sort of properly, you know, zinging between multiple different worlds and
all the ambition.
Yeah, and dozens of different characters, and this feels like it will have the budget because animation, it will have the budget to do that if it wants to do that. And I think, you know, weirdly, because it's a different directing team, it's quite a different team behind the scenes, but a team with sort of good credits. I think that's weirdly, it makes you more hopeful than if it was the exact same people who, you know, just trying to find magic in a bottle twice. So yeah, I'm hopeful.
Yeah, I think that is pretty much my feeling as well. Although the thing that I'm, you know, as a massive comics nerd, the thing that I'm excited by is the amount of sort of cameos and references they're going to be cramming into this. Because I think if you're deep in Spider-Man lore, you're going to get a lot out of the background stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. I saw Superior Spider-Man in there.
Sorry, that's what I was going to say, James. The not specifically Superior Spider-Man, but we talked so much on the Spider-Man PS5 game episode that there's so much fun to be had with Spider-Man just seeing those different variations of the suits. And I don't even think you need to be a nerd for Spider-Man lore to look at that trailer and go, oh, cool, cool, cool. You know? The fun, the small pleasures you got from the alt universe stuff in Multiverse of Madness with, you know, different versions of characters showing up. I can imagine, you know, just like picking someone out in the back of the frame is going to be that. But then you're right, as like more nerdy Spider-Man stuff goes, or people that are familiar with the comics and like different iterations that have shown up over the years, like, I'm sure for you, seeing Superior Spider-Man or Scarlet Spider or whatever, you know, might be, you know, various that you might be like, oh, what does that mean? Oh, what are they going to be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing how much time those people get and in what context. And just knowing that Spider-Man 2099 is going to be in there is fun enough.
I think the only worrying sign for me is having seen, I don't know if either you guys saw Avatar at the weekend.
Oh, obviously, midnight showing. Okay. In 4DX.
That's a no from you, and I'm guessing a no from Jack.
Yeah, although I'm excited to see it, just not yet.
Yeah, I know, and no spoilers, but that does feel like the first half of a two-part story. And I mean that in the negative way. At least that was my sort of feeling toward it. You know, and you have that. You had the Harry Potter sort of double, you know, the double enders and the Hunger Games. And there is a risk that, you know, you have enough story for a movie or a movie and a half and it just doesn't feel satisfying enough. But who could say?
But sometimes it works. Sometimes it does work, I think, you know, sometimes.
Well, like you say, Back to the Future 2 and 3 are the ones where like two separate movies
are
all in service of one story. Like that's the model. If it's Infinity War Endgame, I won't be surprised, but I would prefer, like two linked but separate stories.
Yeah.
What was the example you just gave, Reese?
Avatar and Hunger Games and Harry Potter.
Yeah, like I think Harry Potter is an example of it working.
Okay.
But I think a lot, you know, like the wrong lessons were learned from that ultimately. And I kind of think, weirdly, like Twilight is maybe a good example of it working as well. Just about.
But you do wonder though. My gut is that there is a better single film. You know, you had two films of various merits, but there is a better single film in all of those cases, I would argue. Although Avatar, I'm not sure you want, because the next one hasn't come out yet, right? But anyway.
Wow. Okay. So that's our thoughts on one Marvel trailer, but there's also another that has come out, and that is the Guardians 3 teaser. I say teaser; it's quite long.
Hmm.
About a minute and a half, is it? Maybe two.
It's as they all are, James. They're teaser trailers in that they tease the plot rather than being necessarily any slower or any shorter.
But yeah, so I watched this one, and I, even though Guardians 2 is one of my least favorite Marvel films, I found myself quite excited by the developments that have occurred in between like 2 and 3, and the promise of a story focused on Rocket, who I think can be a really interesting character. Some of the nerdy stuff in there. There was Adam Warlock. There was the High Evolutionary. Despite myself, I'm sort of excited for this. And I expect that may be a minority opinion in this group, which is why I wanted to get my opinion in first. So,
Reese?
Yeah, Reese, let's start with you.
No, I'm coloured by the viewing tonight, but if I were to separate that out, I think, no, it's a good trailer. It just all hinges on if you think there's enough juice in the tank for a third, a concluding chapter of the Guardian story.
A belated concluding chapter as well.
That's true. But my gut is that James Gunn, even from what I said about him before, probably is going to put a whole lot into this one. And I feel like he is a good endings guy. You know, actually, if I think about the endings of the individual films, I think they tend to be, you know, the stronger moments of those films. He does know how to kind of stick the landing. And so yeah. And, you know, and back to the sort of the heartfelt stuff, you know, which I thought was really good at the end of the Suicide Squad, or throughout the Suicide Squad, which is his, you know, most recently released, you know, theatrical film. It looks like Rocket is toast. It looks like very cryy and sad, and you got the Gamora stuff. And so I could see all that being mined cathartically. Now, if he hasn't punched up his joke writing any better than the Guardians Christmas special, then that means that half the movie will be a little bit of a bore. But, you know, maybe he has.
Can I just shock you?
Always.
I watched this trailer when it came out. It did nothing for me. I enjoyed it more and was more optimistic having just watched it now after having watched the Guardians Holiday Special. And I'll tell you for why. I think the stuff that's successful in the Guardians Holiday Special is the emotional ending stuff. There are stretches of it where it does feel like a joke that has played out, and that you know, as Reece says, it's not the funniest. It can be a bit tiresome. But I think that when he does that earnest emotional stuff and reminds you that James Gunn really cares about these characters, and you know, like I think it's impossible not to compare with Taika Waititi, who, you know, we obviously like a lot of people, I think us included, were burnt out on his kind of irreverence and his humor style by the time it came to Love and Thunder. But with James Gunn, like if I have that burnout, which I might, I think the fact that he like deeply cares about all those characters is going to be enough to kind of get me through with Guardians.
Over the line.
I think he genuinely cares about the emotional arcs of those characters, and that the reason he's coming back and doing this third movie is because he wants to finish off their stories. And it's not a movie that I'm worried about being burdened down with other MCU stuff, and I kind of feel like, yes, he might be throwing in a bunch of stuff that's, you know, like niche Marvel stuff, but like it's niche Marvel stuff that he wants to include because it's stuff that he wants to tell in his story. And so, yeah, I rewatching that trailer and going, actually, if what the end goal of this movie is to reach a point of emotional catharsis with these characters, whether some make it and some don't, kind of, you know, I would expect some will go further with than others, because I think, you know, some have got, I don't know, for example, like, if there's much more you would do with Nebula in this movie, other than, you know, reuniting her with Gamora. But yeah, I think I'm there for that. I think what was underwhelming to me on first watch of this trailer was, I think it all looks a little bit muddy. It all looks like there's lots of, I mean, basically everything looks that kind of like browny red of,
yeah,
of Quill's suit, and like the Adam Warlock's gold isn't really popping, and I wonder whether it's just, you know, it hasn't had its proper
hasn't had
its proper color grade yet, and it just it didn't look great, and also, you know, from that trailer, it's tough to get a real idea of the shape of the story, and, you know, how Adam Warlock's going to play in, and how the High Evolutionary is going to play in, and I'd assume the High Evolutionary is Rocket's origin. Is that a comics thing?
That's what I can assume. I don't think that is the comics origin, but it seems like that's the one that, yeah, James Gunn's going with, yeah.
And then based on the Guardians holiday special, sounds like Cosmo's a member of the team now. And Kraglin, and I don't know. that's other stuff that I'm like kind of less psyched by. But yeah, and I hope that what this movie is able to do is, you know, give me the version of Chris Pratt that I really liked in the first Guardians movie, and like feel, yeah, like I've rarely seen since.
But it doesn't look like we'll get that with this. It looks the mistake with him was like making him, he should never have been the leader of the group. I think he that wasn't how that first movie ended. He just didn't.
But
he wasn't that guy.
But he's, you know, not.
He's
been in that position.
Yeah, he is. He definitely is.
Is he?
He gets quoted that in the Christmas special. I mean, I watched it an hour ago. So
right, okay. It always just feels like he's been, like, he is nominally the leader. But
he
thinks he's the leader, but he's constantly being undercut and emasculated by the people around him.
Yeah, I just don't know that he needed to become high status. Although I guess he was that in the first movie, because the whole gag is that he calls himself Star-Lord, and so he.
Yeah, it's always that he sees himself as that rather than.
Yeah,
there's definitely a moment in this movie where someone unironically calls him Star-Lord, right?
Yeah,
I don't think they've done that moment yet.
Thank you, being my captain, Star-Lord. And then he cries, and then Rocket. Do you think we see Bradley Cooper in this movie?
See Bradley Cooper?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
I don't either, but I know why you're saying that, Reese, because it feels like something that they might do is throw in a Bradley Cooper cameo as another character.
Well, no, I was thinking more, you know.
Or that he could be like the
pre genetic modification.
Yeah, forgetting his origin, and also, you know, in the trailer you get these combinations of animals and humans. Yeah, I just wonder whether you see Bradley Cooper in it. I could see.
Here's my question.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon, right?
Who do you think of the Guardians cast we see again after Guardians 3?
Good question. I think probably the new Guardians are maybe,
well, whether new Guardians or
in other contexts.
Yeah, just in other contexts in the MCU.
So I think Rocket's going to survive. I think we'll see Rocket again. I think Kraglin and Nebula will be in the new Guardians. I think Gamora and Quill are probably done. I think no one's going to care about Mantis, and I think Drax is probably done.
So I'll go one further. I'd say none of them, actually, because the ones you've, I kind of agree with you, but the ones you've kept, save for, I guess, Nebula. But I don't know. I just don't know that. I think these characters interact with the rest of the MCU. We just did that. We had two movies of that, and it was satisfying. But I don't know that you want to see any of these characters interact more with the MCU. Now, maybe Adam Warlock, or maybe the new characters that are introduced in this. Sure, Adam Warlock, right? But yeah, I'm going to say maybe none of them, maybe none of the original group.
So I'm fairly certain we don't see any more Gamora and any more Drax because of the actors. I feel like there's an outside chance that Chris Pratt sticks around in a different context.
It depends how he feels about his career.
Yes, yeah, and again, you know, from him career wise, the Jurassic World movies are done. Like, would it be the worst thing to, for him to have this franchise to come back to? And yeah, I guess that the rest, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, they're still on the board and, you know, you're able to return to them and maybe you can say that, oh yeah, out there somewhere there's a Guardians of the Galaxy team consisting of Mantis, Rocket, Groot, Adam Warlock and Kraglin or whatever.
Kraglin, and Nebula, definitely Kraglin,
but,
yeah.
But that we're not actively having Guardians of the Galaxy movies, but should we want to, I don't know, in Eternals 2 have a subplot where Rocket and Groot turn up, then you can do that.
James, you say Kraglin, definitely Kraglin. Kraglin's going to be Jimmy Hulse or something, right? You know, Gunn is going to find a fucking place for his brother in the, you know, the core of his new DCU. So I think
probably, but I also think James Gunn is not going to cut his brother loose from the MCU. No. So I think James Gunn will make it as difficult as possible for the next person who picks up the Guardians to disregard Kraglin. That's what I'd do.
Yeah. They seem so connected to to James Gunn, and you know, and unless things go very south at DC, there is now zero chance that he's ever coming back to this side of the universe. And so, yeah, I don't think we'll get the Guardians as a brand after this, as a team, as an active team.
I don't for now. I think it's a concept that you can park and come back to.
I think they're going to be back in Secret Wars one way or another, but I also think probably not a standalone movie for a while. I think they'll be doing stuff with the cosmic universe, but they won't be doing more Guardians of the Galaxy's movies for a long time.
It's going to be interesting to see if they. I mean, you know, I don't think it'll be as simple as they find somebody else to do cosmic stuff going forward. But, you know, James Gunn definitely sort of opened up that whole side of the MCU and he's now departing. And if, as we all agree that the Guardians and those characters are kind of going to be put onto the shelf for a bit, you know, what will be the sort of active cosmic MCU characters through the end of Phase 6? Or maybe there won't be. Maybe Guardians 3 is all we need in that side of things until post-Secret Wars, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think Nova's going to happen. Silver Surfer will happen at some point, probably not before Secret Wars. I can see the direction they'll go with it. Maybe Warlock and the Infinity Watch, who knows? probably not then.
What did you make of the look of Adam Warlock, James?
I agree with Joe. I thought, you know, he should be gold and he should be shiny gold, not sort of weird muddy brown.
But, and here's my counterpoint to
Will Poulter's very handsome.
Will Poulter is so handsome. the hair looks good. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, it still doesn't massively excite me for that character, but I'll be interested to see what James Gunn does with him because, you know.
You know, is Debicki in this?
I don't think so, but yeah, I don't think she's been announced, but.
I wonder if Adam Warlock will be, they'll sort of essentially erase that moment from the end of 2, and have Adam Warlock be just, you know, created by the High Evolutionary, or they'll try and connect those two, or he won't be, you know, he won't have come from the High Evolutionary, you know, I wonder. That's all.
Okay. It's worth thinking about. I can say that much. I got, let me see. I have two more news items, both of which are quite small, and then we can maybe talk about Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to veto one of these.
Sorry?
I'm definitely going to veto one of these.
Okay, well, I'll start with the most obviously vetoable one then, which is, I just wanted to check in. This isn't a comics property we talked a lot about, although we did cover one of the movies. Have either of you guys watched the Wednesday Netflix series?
Veto. No, I'm not.
Netflix.
I'm not indulging you on this, James.
a comics-based show.
No, this is not covered, healthy. It's not healthy.
Covered the
you,
Addams
James.
Family. No, it's a very good TV show.
Speak on Wednesday for a bit, James.
Yeah. I just wanted to say...
He's got a problem.
It's done very well for Netflix.
His problem are manic pixie goth girls. And you shouldn't indulge this.
No, listen. Listen, we listen to you be horny on every episode. It's James's turn.
Oh, dear.
Genuinely, I think it's really fun and well-directed. I was shocked to discover in episode 8 that Christina Ricci is in the cast because I did not recognize her. And yeah, it's been fucking huge for Netflix. So I think it's not the sort of comics property we'll probably cover a lot, but I think if you like genre TV, and God knows we watch a lot of bad genre TV, then it is worth checking out. And if neither of you guys have watched it, that's all I'll say for now.
I'm never going to watch Wednesday.
You're mad.
I just don't have the time for that kind of TV. But I'm glad that you like it and that people like it. But like, I'm sure I would have gobbled it up like 5-10 years ago. But I don't.
It's like if Riverdale had its shit together.
But exactly, like if Riverdale came back next season, it was like, oh, it's got its shit together. It's amazing now. I'm like, I'm really happy for the people that love Riverdale. but I don't have it in me to watch that many hours of something like that.
That is fair.
By something like that,
you're lost.
Yeah, I mostly just mean a TV show that's not made for me.
Sure. Reese, can I count on you to watch it?
Well, I'm not like Joe. I do watch sort of stupid. I watched all of Obi-Wan Kenobi, so I'm a fan. I tell you what might happen. I could see if my sisters haven't watched it already, I'm staying with them for like a week over Christmas. That could be, that Wednesday could
pop
to the old rotation.
Sounds good. My 9-year-old kid binge watched it.
Ooh.
Because she said, I'm probably too young to watch this, aren't I? And I went, you know what? I've seen it all. It's not too bad. There's a little bit of swearing, a little bit of gore. You can handle it. And she watched the lot. She loved it. She made a Wednesday Roblox avatar.
What I do love about, none of the other streaming services or major media fucking conglomerates bullshit, none of them have these kind of come out of nowhere, like phenomenon monolith mega hits. And every time Netflix pops one out, it's just kind of fun. It's like this thing, it was probably, barely announced, or just barfed out by Netflix. And it just truly organically connects with its audience because Netflix has such crazy reach.
Do you know what?
I like that. I really like that.
Organically with an N. Yeah, yeah.
The wild thing about the Netflix stuff, though, is whilst, yes, I agree that's true, I will also see, like, quite regularly now on Twitter, like, Netflix cancels show X after 2 seasons, and you're like, what? That exists and has those people in it. Oh, okay. And it's just sat there in a completely different part of the algorithm than what is served up to me. And they have these hits, but then you're like, yeah, but they throw so many fucking darts. And it's almost like, they're like all of the networks like rolled into one. It's like they're making their CW shows and they're making their NBC comedies and they're making their Fox dramas or whatever. And they're just all on there. And some of them are working and some of them aren't. And some of them are working, but it costs so much fucking money that they can't afford to make anymore. Netflix is wild. I've signed up for I've changed my account to the ad supported version of Netflix. Mostly because I just want to see what it's like.
How much is that in this country?
It's launched this month. So as soon as my next billing date, which is like within the next week, comes about, I will be on ad supported Netflix. And I'm, I work in that. In that realm as well, so I'm kind of I'm super interested to see what Netflix is like with ads, because from what I've read about it, it sounds currently fairly ill thought out. But also, were they to get it right, potentially the next big shift in streaming.
Well, you know, I just think it's so funny. We saw that this is not really our purview, but I just find it fascinating. You know, the recent, all that stuff getting pulled from HBO, and apparently it's going to go to these FAST networks, right, which is free ad supported TV, and Netflix creating this new ad tier, Disney Plus creating an ad tier, which is, so basically they're just creating TV.
They've like, just recreated TV. Yeah. This is,
we've gone through this huge upheaval. I guess to get what you end up on the other side is you are watching TV, but the difference is that when you're watching ITV before, lots of those shows were made and the profit went to other production companies, whereas now you'll go to, you know, ad support Netflix, and all that ad revenue and profit is going to, all those shows are just Netflix shows, and Disney Plus ad supported, it's just Disney shows, and HBO Max, when they do launch their own FAST thing, it'll be just stuff they own. So that's the difference. But it's, I don't know, it's weird, and I liked TV. I like TV, and we've traded it for something probably worse, with, you know, with more homogenous content.
All I want is, as long as I can keep paying to not see adverts, I will check any amount of money at those people. I don't want to see adverts ever. I resent seeing them at the fucking cinema. So if Netflix doubled their price tomorrow, I would pay it happily.
Oh, unless they cancel Wednesday. And then,
oh,
and
yeah, obviously. In that case, no chance. Okay. So that was our Netflix advert section. We can cash the check. Last piece of news. Did either of you know that Blade has a director again?
I think I remember this from about a month ago. Who are they and what have they done?
It's Yann Demange, who is okay.
Is it? That's cool.
Okay, so you know him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He directed 71.
He did.
Which was a Film 4 release when I was working at Film 4. Mm-hmm. And is very good. It stars Jack O'Connell as like a squaddy in Northern Ireland in 71 who gets caught up behind the lines during the Troubles, and it's like an assault on Precinct 13 kind of.
Okay.
But like him trying to get back to base as this British squaddy behind enemy lines, and I remember, you know, kind of hearing quite a lot of Yann Demange interviews at the time. I thought he sounded cool. He was rumored to be in the running for like Bond at one point, and his name's been thrown around a bit. And he's done a TV thing more recently, right? I don't.
He did Lovecraft Country, I believe.
Right. Okay. So that's cool. It's cool that he's finally got that kind of bigger, high profile gig, because he definitely had. You know, it felt like a less kind of 71 to me felt like a less genre-y, like exhibition of skills that like Attack the Block feels.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, obviously after Attack the Block, everyone was saying, "Well, Joe Cornish needs to be directing." You know, whatever Hollywood can throw at him, and.
Yeah, that's not what happened. But
it's not what happened. But yeah, Yann Demange, that's cool.
Yeah, and as we know, Blade is a British character, so.
Is he? Is that true?
He is. He technically is. They sometimes use it as an angle in the comics, but he was born, I believe, in Soho in London.
Huh.
Blimey, Gavin. But, like Stephen. Yeah.
That doesn't come up in the Wesley Snipes films so often.
He doesn't give off Cockney in those.
Okay. So yeah, I had a feeling that Joe might have heard of that director. I hadn't, obviously.
I hadn't heard the news. So
I'm glad to have brought it to you then. Yeah. And I think it makes me slightly more excited about Blade, having heard what you just said about him.
Yeah, watch 71. I'd recommend.
I'll check it out. Okay, that's all the news. We were going to do a separate Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special episode, but having watched it, there's not really enough to fill half an hour. It's barely enough to fill 15 minutes, but
yeah.
We're going to try anyway. We're just going to tack it on the end of this. So yeah, I know Reese has been chomping at the bit to talk about it. So let's start with him. Reese, what did you think of the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special?
A little mantis goes a long, long way. That was my big takeaway from this.
That is fair.
The episode, the thing starts. I'm going to call it a thing. Thing starts, and then you get to sort of the premise, and then you're like, "Oh, I guess it'll be okay." Mantis and Drax. Oh, you know, we actually haven't spent a ton of time with like such a small little group, including Mantis. And then she starts fucking screeching every goddamn punchline.
There's so much shouting. Although I would say, Reese, I think the same applies to both of them. Like for me.
Yeah,
the weakest stuff throughout the holiday special is when it is just Drax and Mantis. They're not that like the it's not a repeat of the same gag from last time. Which I think James Gunn has probably rightfully steered away from, of like him just finding her disgusting. Like there's probably a limit to how much Drax can just be disgusted by women in the Guardians movies.
Yeah, we hit it about 10 minutes into Guardians 2, I think.
Well, we definitely hit it with the whore stuff in the first Guardians, and then that's the extended riff. But yeah, you're right about the screeching, and I just the two of them together were hard work, I thought. wasn't fun to be around them.
I thought that stuff was my favorite. It was really funny. I genuinely thought it was very funny that they took the two dumbest members of the Guardians and sent them out to do something that was wholly beyond their capabilities, which is to, you know, abduct Kevin Bacon without making too much of a fuss.
That would be a funny montage, you know, 3-minute montage, and this was 25 minutes of that.
Yeah, that was. It's fair that there's a lot of it, and it seems like there's a lot of it because it's cheap. And they were like, "Well, we put them in makeup, and we put them in a house in Hollywood, so just fucking go because this is costing us nothing compared to the average Guardians movie."
I'll say, I thought this was awful. Actually, the more you're reminding me, I thought it was really, really.
I thought long stretches of it were pretty. I didn't think it was awful. I just thought it wasn't hitting the mark for me. I didn't the stuff with the band. Who's the band? It's a real band, right?
The old number 97s.
Yeah, is that a thing? I don't know. Again, I don't know music, but the alien band. All of the musical interludes, I was just like, you know, snoring through, and the Drax and Mantis stuff, I struggled with. I actually thought like there was like a couple of nuggets in there. I liked them, but like they were nuggets. I liked the idea at the center of it of Mantis's Peter's sister, which is something that everyone in the audience had forgotten before they were reminded of at the start.
Sure,
of this.
Yeah.
But I liked that nugget, and I liked that moment of connection between the two of them at the end. And I thought it felt genuinely sweet when it was like, yeah, the best Christmas present I could have got is finding out I've still got some family. And I thought actually, Chris Pratt kind of good in his bits in this. I give him his due. I think he was one of the better parts of this. I liked the gift giving moment from Groot with the little dioramas. I think that the biggest laugh that this got out of me was when Kraglin opened his diorama of him opening the diorama, and it was
was a good moment.
I chuckled at that. I hope Kevin Bacon got paid. I
thought it was funny that the first time Kevin Bacon turns up, he's on a mobile phone. I was like, oh yeah, that's how I expect to see Kevin Bacon.
I also thought that the gag with the phone signal, I thought, oh, that's so close to being an EE ad. So close.
Do you think that was Kira Sedgwick on the other end of the phone?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, it was, yeah. Okay. The stuff that I find a little bit, all of James Gunn's little, like, Flula Borg turns up. I'm sure there's a bunch of these that I miss, but Flula Borg from the Suicide Squad turns up as the bartender, and the maps from the stars thing, that little graphic that they bring up on screen as John Cena, and I don't like, they're just inside jokes. I don't know who they're for. James Gunn fans specifically, but they're not for MCU fans, are they? They're not for the Suicide Squad fans coming to this for little nods and winks, and you know, I kind of find James Gunn's, you know, nepotistic-y stuff that he does, you know, the fact that Sean Gunn is now a core member of the Guardians, despite Kraglin having nothing interesting about him. I'm not sure who's excited about the next Guardians movie because Kraglin's in it. And as we said, like, fucking Amelia Harcourt turning up in Black Adam, like, I'm sure that's a character that won't be recast as we go into the next phase of the DC universe.
Well, on the week of Nepo Babies, though, you know, it's sort of, it's good that we're talking about this. Yeah. You know, he's a good emblem.
Yeah, it's relevant. So that stuff I thought found tiresome, but like I think probably just the final scene made me a little bit more positive. Going like, oh, I like this idea. I like this idea of them being brother and sister and it being a sweet Christmas moment. But mostly, I'm not sure why this exists other than cheap content for the streaming service.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of notable how all the Guardian stuff basically takes place in one set that was clearly already built. And they're just like, well, we can string up some lights and we don't need to do anything. We can just shoot one angle.
They've now apparently bought Nowhere from the collector. Yeah. That's a thing.
Sure.
And Cosmo's there. Is Cosmo voiced by Miley Cyrus? Is that?
No, it's Maria Bakalova.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Who was Miley? Yeah. Who was the Miley Cyrus Guardians thing?
She was the
was it the robot? Was she a robot?
Crystal? Oh, was it the robot? Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Cosmo was it was introduced as a joke that we already knew almost. Did you get that vibe of like Cosmo?
What the.
Like Cosmo was there as like, and it was like, oh, you already know the gag with this dog, right? I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I thought that was a bit strange. I wasn't sold on Cosmo as a concept. And I think that was part of the worry as well, is it all did feel a bit cut rate Guardians. Like not having Zoe.
It was definitely cut rate Guardians.
But not, you know, not having Zoe Saldana, Yondu not being there, and the animated stuff.
The animated bits were so awful. I don't understand why they did that. In fact, I was told by someone else that the reason they did that is because the Star Wars animated special has animated bits at the start.
Well, that's what I was, but then I was surprised that
it the rest of it isn't very Star Warsy, is it?
It's so. Well, other than it's got musical performances that are like built into the narrative, but I was expecting this to be a lot more direct,
yeah, a lot more parody,
yeah,
yeah.
And then, but then the animation didn't need to be that crap, did it?
No, it did not, especially because, you know, they've got an animation department, right?
Yeah,
that was doing pretty good stuff over in What If, so why was this so bad? I don't understand why they did that. And also bringing back Yondu just for that stuff didn't really work for me.
I thought that scene could have worked with Michael Rooker.
Yeah, if it had been live action, then absolutely.
Because
you would have got the connection.
The concept of the scene is quite nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not telling us anything that we didn't know about those characters and their relationship already, though. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the case. I'm. It didn't feel like there was anything here that James Gunn was like, I need to tell this story. I really need to make this holiday special. Didn't seem like anything that was conceptually interesting enough about it to justify doing it. And like what do we learn about the characters? Like I say, I feel like it's basically that final scene is it, and then it can act as a little bit of a trailer for the Guardians movie, and like, you know, but almost in, you know, like an issue zero of a comic, or you know, one of those movie tie-ins where it's like, here's what happens in the lead up to Iron Man 2.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. The one point I will say in its favor, beyond what I've already said about finding it quite entertaining generally, is that this is probably better than most of the Marvel TV stuff, just by virtue of being sort of mediocre. At least it was over quickly.
Jeez.
I'm very down on Marvel TV.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be seeing less and less of it.
So Disney just released a teaser for like next year's slate. And aside from not mentioning What If, which fair enough, they were like, we've got a Loki show and we've got Secret Invasion. And then they didn't mention anything else.
I'd be stunned if we don't. I think stuff like this might continue to exist, and I think all of the animated stuff makes a lot of sense.
Well, this reminded me of the one shots, which I like that idea of like doing small scale one off stories that might have characters you know in, rather than trying to launch a whole property on a budget. So we'll see what they do with the streaming TV, but I think the days of 4 or 5 series a year are probably over.
Yeah, and you know, going back to what we said earlier, like, would I rather see Oscar Isaac getting the Moon Knight deal or Donald Glover getting the Hypno-Hustler deal? Like, yeah, I want to see the
Hypno-Hustler.
Yeah, I want to see the 2-hour movie. Like, I want to see the 2-hour movie version of Moon Knight more than I want to see 6 hours of padded out content. Like, I think there's obviously a way to do these TV series really well. But when you're talking about the budgets that Marvel content demands and that the kind of actors that they need to be working with, you know, in terms of profile, then it just feels so much harder to get it right on the small screen.
Well, that's the claim that was made recently as to why they turned Armor Wars into a movie, which is they basically said the set pieces we wanted to do, we just couldn't do on a TV budget, which, sure. Anyway.
I have nothing to add on that. I'm more engaged with all of the sort of the big industry changey stuff that as we're saying is going to affect all this stuff, and it will all happen in the background. It won't get remarked upon. You know that this has been a bit of an experiment. Really over the last probably 3 years, I think a lot of people behind the scenes have looked at the numbers and gone, this didn't work. And
have we podcasted since the Bob Iger news came out?
Possibly, but we definitely didn't talk about it.
I just feel like that's the thing that like almost confirms all of the suspicions we've had in the background about Disney streaming. You know, like that they're
it's actually not that good.
Well, no, that Disney Plus has not been profitable for Disney, and and Disney had really, really struggled from an earnings point of view in the last quarter, to the point that Bob Chapek went, Bob Iger is back. And it feels like a change of direction for Disney streaming of the type that we've kind of felt like might have been coming anyway is due. And I don't think, you know, I think if Kevin Feige had his choice, he certainly wouldn't be making the volume of TV that he's making right now. He probably wouldn't have made any to begin with. Now that he's made it, maybe he can look back at it and go, right, well, here's the stuff that I actually think works, and here's the stuff that could be beneficial to do alongside the movies, but you know, almost certainly not at the scale and the volume that we've seen so far.
Do you think that's why these are all called a Kevin Feige production? Do you think he was like, okay, listen, don't make me do this shit. I don't want to do this shit. And Bob Iger /Chapek sort of said, okay, what if we let you call these your production? Oh, okay, all right, fine, and we'll give you loads of money. Oh, okay, all right. James Gunn, you want to, I don't know, write a Kevin Bacon story? I'll give you $3 million to make it, or less. the new year, you know, if we're wrapping up and we're looking back at the year that has been, we've covered a lot of stuff that we didn't love and a lot of things that have made us, you know, question this whole industry and this genre. But here is another year and who knows? There's always the Joker sequel. A musical starring Lady Gaga as Harley Quinn.
Sounds good, doesn't it? It sounds great. Yeah. What's the problem with all of this stuff? It all still sounds good.
It sounds good, yeah.
I have to say, I've watched like The Batman sort of drunk late at night, probably five or six times, or bits of it, because it's 3 hours, I'm not watching the whole thing. But that movie's really grown on me. I want to get that theme back. Bam, bam, bam.
Maybe they'll add an extra note this time.
Oh, please. And, you know, the Quantumania trailer looks cool, guys, right? That's got a cool soundtrack on it. That's in Feb.
I'm always optimistic.
On the soundtrack point, the brass balls of James Gunn opening and closing this with Fairy Tale of New York. He's never been afraid of hitting that sweet spot of slightly off-piece choices with clangingly obvious ones thrown into the mix at the same time.
Well, I think he thinks that's a really odd off-ball choice for America. Well,
maybe. I don't.
Because I don't think that is a standard in America like it is here.
Maybe.
And I think, that's one takeaway from the soundtrack of this. And the other takeaway is, we get it, James Gunn, you like pop punk. I get it. I get that that's the one you like, and it's like all the fucking music you want
to
play.
So does Joe, to be fair.
You know, will Blink 182 like be the soundtrack to the new Young Superman? I mean, maybe.
I'd watch it.
He's an American idiot, and he like throws it, saves a car. Da, 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 da. I could see it.
Yeah, you're probably right. Okay, let's wrap it up there. I think I don't think there's any more news. We will be back probably just after Christmas. Christmas, New Year time with some kind of end of year review. We're not sure if it'll be full cuppies because we've not covered a lot of movies this year compared to most.
Kind of riff on the cuppies that it can't be the same based on the nature of the podcast now. But you know, the cuppies must prevail,
or you know, maybe not. We don't know.
No, run into the ground.
as you admitted earlier, that is your strategy with things, so. Yes. Fair enough.
But we thank you, all our listeners, for continuing to subscribe and for our Patreons continuing to subscribe to that.
Please pay in dollars, not pounds.
I've obviously a newer member in the full-time team here, so I've had a fun couple of years.
Yeah, we'll do your review later.
On the cup. I'll tell you what,
if I don't get an 8% pay rise, I'm going on strike. That's what it's...
How are we going to notice?
I'm joining the. That's yeah. Okay. That's, Merry Christmas, Reese.
Okay. I'll leave you alone.
Yeah. I was trying to do a nice heartfelt, you know, message out to listeners.
I had to undercut it James Gunn style, you know.
James Gunn style, okay. Fuck you, listeners. Fuck you, Jen. Fuck you, Joe. I quit the podcast. You'll never hear from me again. I'm going to start my own rival podcast. It's going to be called Filmatic Glow.
Sounds like it's going to be great.
Okay, you can find us on Twitter at @cine_verse. Also, I am at James Hunt. Joe is at Joe Cunningham 14, and Reese is at Reese. We are on Patreon at patreon.com/cinematicuniverse, where you can find us doing all sorts of bonus episodes. I can't remember what the last thing we did was. Help me out, someone. Werewolf by Night.
Black Adam.
We did Black Adam too, yeah, where you can hear all about how we found that key piece of the DC Extended Universe.
Utter piece of shit.
It did. The power hierarchy in the DC Universe has changed, so. But yeah, that's it for this month. We'll be back as discussed sometime after Christmas, maybe early January. Who knows?
What's the next TV show to come out? Is it Ant-Man?
Ooh, it's What If or Ant-Man? Yeah, we don't know for sure yet. But
and I guess we'll do a Wednesday episode by episode recap. James, me and you over the
absolutely
the yeah great me you and your daughter yep. great.
sounds good. Right. Time to check out.
Yes. Goodbye podcast.
Goodbye podcast. Yeah.
Goodbye podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.